Hello, everyone. Welcome to Better Health While Aging, a podcast that gives you strategies and information about improving the health and well-being of older adults. We discuss common health problems that affect people over age 60, the best ways to prevent and manage those problems, and we also often address common concerns and dilemmas that come up with aging parents and other older loved ones, like what to do if you're worried about falls or safety or memory or even the quality of a senior's healthcare. I'm your host, Dr. Leslie Kernison. I'm a practicing geriatrician, so that means I'm a medical doctor specializing in geriatrics, which is the art and science of modifying healthcare so that it works better for older people and for their families. Today's episode features a special guest, and I'll be speaking with Amy Berman, RN, who is a senior program officer with the John A. Hartford Foundation. And we are going to be talking about one of the Hartford Foundation's recent major initiatives, promoting age-friendly health systems. As some of you may recall, the Hartford Foundation is dedicated to improving the healthcare of older adults, and we covered some of the ways that they do this in episode 19, which was about philanthropy and geriatrics. So as a longtime program officer, Amy has been immersed for quite some time in innovations and best practices when it comes to better healthcare for older adults. You might also remember Amy from episode 25, in which she talked about how palliative care services have allowed her to live relatively well despite having stage 4 cancer for over 6 years. So it's really a huge pleasure for me to have Amy join me again on the podcast to tell us more about age-friendly health systems, why the foundation is making them a priority, and how they can benefit us all. Amy, welcome back to the show.
Thanks so much, Leslie.
So I want to focus on age-friendly health systems, but since I know some of our listeners may not have heard the previous episode about the foundation, I thought we might start with you just briefly telling us a little bit about the John A. Hartford Foundation, what it does, what kinds of projects it currently supports, and just give our audience a sense of the foundation.
Sure. Well, the John A. Hartford Foundation is located in New York City. We are a national foundation. We fund efforts around the country to improve the care of older adults. Originally, John A. Hartford, the person whose monies make up the foundation, was one of the CEOs of the Great Atlantic and Pacific Tea Company, also known as the A&P food store chain. And so he left his money in a foundation, which was started in 1929. And as I said, the work that we do is around the country to help make sure that people get better care, better health, better outcomes, and it's a pleasure to be here.
And if I remember right, the foundation is kind of unique in having a very specific focus on older adults when it comes to health. And I certainly remember the foundation being a big part of my educational experience as a geriatrics fellow. Because in the past, the Hartford Foundation has been pretty instrumental in funding geriatrics education. But am I right that it's one of the largest foundations to really focus on that intersection between health and aging?
You are correct, Leslie. And if somebody is a geriatrician like yourself, or if they work with older adults and have had that as part of their education and training, if they're a nurse, if they're a social worker, they would likely have at some point had some help along the way, either through their university or they themselves in their training with resources that help make them better at what they do. And today we focus more on the care aspect, so around models of care, care redesign that really helps enhance the care of older adults.
So this is one thing that I always think is good for people to know is that it's foundations like the Hartford Foundation that have just played an immense role in bringing more geriatrics to the population, both in terms of training clinicians. But now the foundation is moving in a evolving in this direction of age-friendly health systems. So tell us a little bit about that and how that became such a priority for the foundation.
Well, thanks, Leslie. We've been focusing, while we've been doing a lot of work around the education and training of healthcare professionals to better meet the needs of older adults, we've also been focusing in on various models, approaches, improvements to care that get better outcomes for older adults that really meet their needs. And for all of this investment in the workforce and in these models of care, and it's been More than $500 million of investment since the 1980s, so a very large investment. For all of these investments, we still find that people around the country oftentimes don't get the care that we know that they should be receiving. We have strong evidence that certain things produce better outcomes in people, and yet that's not what they receive. So we decided to take a different approach. We decided that we would work with the health systems themselves, along with leading innovators, the experts who have developed these models or proven in the science that there are better ways to care for older adults, and co-design together, looking at essential elements of care that should be deployed across the system consistently so that people can expect that these aspects of their care, no matter where they are within a health system, in the hospital, in home care, in primary care, in rehab or nursing home, that they would be safe and well cared for across the continuum of care. It's not that these health systems have to do everything. It is really what are the essential elements that we believe they should at minimum do to ensure safety. And then if they make these changes, the belief is that they will see better outcomes and be more engaged in implementing other approaches that are helpful in meeting the needs of much older adults, complex older adults.
Okay. I, of course, think this is a wonderful idea, but maybe we can get into a few more specifics. I mean, what does an age-friendly health system look like or feel like? How would it be different from the care people get now? How would somebody know if they were experiencing an age-friendly health system?
So I think that there are really four things that we're talking about as defining an age-friendly health system. It's a system where older adults get the best care possible, where healthcare-related harms to older adults are dramatically reduced and approaching zero, where older adults are satisfied with their care, and where value is optimized for everyone. And for people who don't know what that term value means, there's a lot of talk about value in healthcare. Mm-hmm. And this is really, there was a person at Harvard named Michael Porter who used this term in healthcare to say that it is the outcomes over the cost. So how do you get the best possible healthcare outcomes for the best cost, the lowest possible cost? Can we do better for less? Can we do better for the same? You know, this is a value proposition. And so the way in which we think about the age-friendly health system, we started by looking at what are the elements of the different models of care that are out there that get very strong outcomes for older adults. Prevent falls, prevent delirium, better support people as they go home from the hospital so that they avoid, coming back into the hospital. What are, of all of the models, what are the essential elements that we see? And we invited all of these innovators from around the country to come together, and we defined that there were 90 core elements. And that's fairly complex for health systems to take up. So we began to whittle them down to look at kind of common themes across these programs. And we ended up, with the help of both the health systems and the people who have developed the evidence in the field of geriatrics, care of older adults, and we came up with four core elements which make up a prototype of this age-friendly health system. And again, these core elements, which I'm going to tell you, they are not everything that could be done, but we believe that the systems and the people being served by these health systems will see a significant improvement if they are implemented. And we're testing this now. So we're calling them the four M's, and they are what matters. And that means knowing and acting on each patient's specific health outcome goals and care preferences, what matters. The next M is mentation, and this is a focus on delirium and dementia. For listeners who don't know what delirium is, it's kind of a sudden onset, sudden slide in somebody's cognition. And it is a preventable event, and it's a serious event, and can lead to disability or death.
Yeah, no, that's certainly very important. And we've covered it on the podcast, but I will also be sure to put in the show notes a link. And it's actually one of the articles on Better Health While Aging about hospital delirium, which is the most visited.
That's
among
great.
The top visited ones. So yeah, I know it's something that people see in the hospital and want to learn more about. And so certainly very important. But go on for the other third and fourth M.
So the next is mobility. And this is really how we maintain mobility and function and prevent or treat complications of immobility. So I'm sure you can imagine at different points in a health system, we literally cause people to stay in bed, oftentimes needlessly, and we create a decline that we then have to compensate for, things that can later cause things like falls. And then the last one is medication. And this is really how to optimize the use and to reduce harm and burden of medications, focusing on medications that affect mobility, mentation, and what matters. So these things all fit together. They are a panel of things that really become a supportive, essential system of care. And there are interventions. There are things that these health systems are choosing to do in the hospital, in home care, in primary care, in nursing homes to address each one of these four M's.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, you've mentioned a few times models of care, and I know what you mean, and I've read about I think some of the ones you're referring to, if not many. But I think for the listeners, it might be helpful if we explain the difference between a model of care and the age-friendly health system.
Sure.
Or maybe you can give us an example of one or two models of care that were developed and that are kind of going to go into this concept of the age-friendly health system.
Great. So one example of a model of care would be around transitions from the hospital to home. One of them is called the Care Transitions Intervention, and it was developed by a person named Eric Coleman at the University of Colorado in Denver. And the idea of this is to prepare a person before they go home from the hospital to understand how they should act within the health system, what they should be waiting until the following morning to report to their primary care when they go home, what they should be going to the emergency room in the middle of the night. They have to have a good understanding of their own medications. They have to know what to bring with them to their office appointment. And it's an intervention that uses a nurse and helps the person be prepared with a set of skills that help them after their hospitalization avoid a lot of the common problems like having the wrong medication. So if they really understand what they're taking and why they're taking it, if they bring their medications to the doctor's appointment, they are less likely to have medication errors. If they know what is urgent for them and they should go to the emergency room in the middle of the night versus what they should wait to see their provider the following morning, they are more likely to avoid needless hospitalizations. And hospitals can be places where there's additional harm. So that's a model, and it follows them following the hospitalization, and they have very good rates of understanding their care and being able to avoid a lot of the typical problems that happen after hospitalizations.
Yeah, no, I remember Eric Coleman. I remember his intervention, also him coming to speak at UCSF. And if I remember right, it was sort of a coaching.
That's right.
Intervention that not only had we identified that these are all sort of common pitfalls that happen in that moment after hospitalization and that people need these skills and these resources, but that he had created this way of coaching people in this way that once you trained the coaches and the teams to deliver it was pretty reliable and really helped older adults and their families anticipate and address these pitfalls and sort of manage that transition home.
I'm really glad you mentioned that it's coaching because oftentimes when you think about the work that people do within healthcare, they are the doers for the people that we serve. So, we don't equip people, but rather we do for them. And so one of the reasons why that particular model has been extraordinarily strong, gotten great outcomes, because people are prepared past that one hospitalization. They now are equipped with a set of skills, they and their families, that then help them avoid, harms that could potentially happen everywhere within the healthcare setting. They know what to do.
It builds their abilities as patients and kind of people who are involved in the process of overseeing and managing their health. So that is a wonderful model of care. So it sounds like in a way the models of care are, that they were a little bit more specific and focused, right? They were sort of developed for certain groups of patients in certain situations.
Right.
And that maybe the age-friendly health system is something a little bit bigger and broader.
Right. So the models of care address a certain gap in the system, in the way the care is delivered. In this case, people go home oftentimes unprepared, and so they end up bouncing back into the hospital, unfortunately, because of harms of their being unprepared. And so it addresses a problem. But the age-friendly health system addresses the system, and it really helps the system to begin to focus in a new way across different settings, different people, and a whole range of problems, to really, as a system, be safer in addressing and proactive in addressing the needs of older adults.
So when you say system, are we talking about a hospital system? Or, certainly in major metro areas, there are often these healthcare systems that have a hospital or sometimes more than one, and then several clinics. Is that what we're referring to?
So we are referring to it as being the hospital and. So the hospital and, it's home care, it's primary care, it's the nursing homes that are caring for somebody within that healthcare system. So there are places around the country, there's a lot of kind of consolidation within healthcare, so that there are these systems. There are places that have multiple components of care. They may have clinics in all of their resources across all of them. They're going to address these elements of care. So yes, they include a hospital, but they are certainly not limited to a hospital. Today, people are looking at what we refer to as population health. So it is really people across a continuum of care. We need to reach them at the kitchen table. We need to reach them, in the nursing home. So wherever they are within that system of care, where they're receiving their care, they should be receiving the same consistent care addressing these very high-risk areas. For example, mobility. If we are not proactive, unfortunately, we end up having to fix a lot of problems, a lot of harm that we create. Most people, for example, if they were to go into a hospital, and the hospital is just one example, they are put on an order to remain in bed, when in fact we should have mobility orders. We should have a proactive plan for people who might be at risk for a fall to be out of bed, to be ambulating, to have PT. And so we're doing the complete opposite.
Right. Well, I'm glad you brought that up. I mean, that brings up another model of care, which I don't know if I've talked about on the podcast, but I've mentioned it at times on the website, but that's acute care for elders units. I'm also going to post in the show notes this Health Affairs article that you and the foundation's president, Terry Fulmer, authored, because it's a nice overview of age-friendly health systems, but it also has this nice list of models of care that have been shown to be so beneficial to older adults. And the ACE units are there. And so we've known about ACE units for 10, 20 years. I forget exactly when it was the first studies. I think now it's been about 20 years. And that they have great outcomes. But what people sometimes ask me is, well, why aren't there more of them if there are so great? And actually on the Better Health While Aging article on hospital delirium, you know, somebody complains about this, actually, that there are all these hospitals and so few of them have ACE units, because that did come up as something that helps prevent delirium or helps hospitals manage it more effectively. So can you address that a little bit? We have some of these models that are well established and so well validated, and why haven't they expanded more so far?
Well, I think you raise the big point, Leslie, as usual. So ACE units, acute care for the elderly units, are a physical place where people go, where everything about the design is intended to make the care better. So the staff are specially prepared to understand the needs of older adults.
And to mobilize them. That's why.
And to mobilize them, and they come out of bed and they eat together. The floors, instead of those high sheen hospital floors, which create a lot of glare and for older people actually can cause falls. It's lower sheen. They have beds that can go down to the floor so that people are less likely to fall. So they're much lower. People know in these ACE units that they shouldn't be putting up both bed rails, that people, it actually causes injury with falls, particularly for people who are confused. So everything about the management, getting people up and out of bed, the care itself, it's all different on an ACE unit. But even in the best hospital that has the most wonderful ACE unit, and I have to say, Leslie, I was out in your neck of the woods at San Francisco General, and it's an amazing ACE unit. I mean, it's a world-class ACE unit. But many people in San Francisco General and in other places that even have an ACE unit, they're elsewhere in the hospital. So, close to 50% of people in hospitals, the hospital days, are older adults. And so, really, making sure that there are ACE units, but also understanding that everywhere in the hospital needs to be age-friendly and address these needs, their safety needs. This is really the tack that we're taking on the age-friendly health system. So the health systems that we're working with, and we're working, by the way, with Kaiser Permanente, with Ascension, Trinity, Providence, St. Joseph, and the Anne Arundel Medical Center. So these systems, many of them have ACE units. And still, what we're doing is really saying, so when they're not in an ACE unit, what does that care look like? So it's taking what we've learned, like the principles of an ACE unit, and saying, how do we make sure that we can deliver this elsewhere?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, correct me if I'm wrong, but I've been sort of under the impression that historically part of the reason why these models didn't expand as much as they could have was because there wasn't quite enough financial incentive, actually, for hospitals or health systems to adopt them. But that in recent years, we've seen the shift to paying for value, and notably Medicare starting to notice and penalize hospitals for readmissions. And so do you feel that those changes have helped make it easier to expand these models? And is that part of what you're hoping to use to get these age-friendly health systems to take off? Or do you have another approach to making it worthwhile for health systems to make these changes? Because it just seems clear that there was something that was keeping them from adopting these models of care that were always proving to have such good outcomes.
Well, Leslie, you are right as always. There is a change in health systems. They are moving toward value-based payment. So there are incentives for them to do well. They can actually receive some shared savings in different ways, many of these places, all of the ones participating in this care redesign. But these health systems are still living in two worlds. They're living in the getting paid for services and treatments that they provide versus getting paid for the outcomes of care, moving toward that value-based payment. And so it's an interesting time. I think there are many systems that are preparing for moving to completely value-based payment. And so they are investing heavily in geriatrics, in really, looking at an age-friendly health system and you know, approaches that are going to improve the populations that they serve. And without a doubt, the second consideration is the fact that this is the population that they're serving today. This is the core population. This is their bread and butter. This is the largest group of people served by health systems. And what's happening is that that population is doubling. So they are also preparing for the future. And the future is not just twice as many older adults. The future is that these older adults will be skewing much older. So the average age today is in the 60s, the upper 60s. The average age will approach the 80s. And you can imagine the kinds of services, the need for addressing what matters and mentation and mobility and medication. You know, mentation, for example, when you reach 65, the proportion, 85, the proportion of older adults that have cognitive impairment is really striking. So we need to be prepared for systems to understand what that means and how to provide optimal care and avoid really safety issues, avoidable harm.
Mm-hmm. Right, right. So tell us a little bit more about how you're hoping this process will unfold and how the foundation is going to make this, you know, a reality that more older Americans can access.
Right now, we are prototyping this work within five health systems. So they are implementing evidence-based approaches, things that we know already work, but they're packaging them as a suite of services that they're delivering or a suite of approaches that they're delivering. And we are looking at these five health systems, which represent about 40 states. We are looking at what kind of outcomes we're getting in terms of, you know, avoidable harms, healthcare utilization. Are they more likely to be in the community if we do well at this versus ending up in the hospital or other kinds of settings? We have an advisory board that is working with us on this. And I have to say, Don Berwick was enormously helpful in helping us start this initiative.
He's a legend in quality improvement.
He is a legend, and he's just a remarkable person. We are working with the Institute for Healthcare Improvement in really framing this work, and they are the leads on this initiative, so they're the convener. But other people that are engaged in this work, we have, let's see, Kate Goodrich from CMS, who's their chief medical officer. We've got Jay Bott from the American Hospital Association. By the way, the American Hospital Association is a great partner in this work. We have co-chairs of the advisory group, which are Mary Tinetti and Ann Hendrick. People involved in this include Al Su, Nirav Shah from Kaiser, Bruce Leff, and I'm not sure if you know Lucian Leap, kind of the father of safety.
So yeah.
Lucian,
so you have a power team, is what I'm hearing.
We have a great
power team.
And
you're going to focus on five systems and really sort of, I guess, figure out how to get it working there. But since those five systems you said span 40 states, there's actually a good chance that many people might be able to experience this kind of care during this piloting development phase.
That's correct. So we're starting with components of the health system. So there are different places within each one of these health systems for the early testing. Then there is a plan for spread within the systems and a plan to engage other systems to join in these activities. And the goal by 2020, we're looking to reach 20% of health systems, but we're going to define that as hospital. So it's the hospital and, because it's hard to count a health system. They're constantly changing. So we're looking to reach roughly 1,000 hospitals and their surrounding health systems, implementing these evidence-based approaches and getting better care ultimately for older adults.
Right. That's great. So if our listeners want to find an age-friendly health system for themselves or their older loved ones, I mean, it sounds like right now, maybe if they sort of learn more about this project, they might find out which health systems are involved in this, and if it's geographically close, get some care there. But eventually, How will people know which health systems are the age-friendly ones? Because I could imagine that some consumer interest and demand might also motivate hospitals to implement this. Will there be a process of hospitals being certified or a list of which places? How do people find their way to this better care?
So we believe that the health systems themselves will be putting out there the fact that they are participating in the age-friendly health system work, and we're already beginning to see that. But right now it's in the prototype stage, and once we have the outcomes, then we spread within those systems, and then we spread to other systems. Right now, the information on who we're working with, I've told you the five health systems. There is information available on the Institute for Healthcare Improvement site, which is www.ihi.org. And so as more systems participate, we will certainly be sharing that information there. But I know that the systems that are participating are already beginning to share the information with the people that they serve. So this is something that, you know, I agree, the public wants to know. They want to know, can they get better care? And the answer is, of course, yes.
Mm-hmm. And maybe if it's okay, I would love to. I was looking at the Health Affairs article. I would love to share with the listeners the list of sort of expected outcomes, because I feel like those are some sort of specific things that people can ask themselves, you know, is my health system providing this, or, you know, could I ask for help with this? Because while we wait for the health systems to improve themselves and just offer this to everybody consistently, I feel like it helps for older people and their families to know what to ask for, you know, to know what they deserve. So I was thinking we could sort of go through the 10 expected outcomes that you and Terry Fulmer listed in your blog. Would that be okay?
Sure.
Okay, so what you wrote was that expected outcomes of an age-friendly health system would, one, provide care that is concordant with the person's goals. So that's getting to what you said about what matters. So I guess the clinicians will get better at finding out what the person's goals are before they forge ahead with medical care. Two, promote physical function and independence. So that gets at mobility. Mm-hmm. Three, prevents polypharmacy, too many medications, inappropriate medications, the wrong dosage of medications. And I know that's of great interest to a lot of older people and their families. Four, address common geriatric syndromes like falls, delirium, and incontinence. Five, manage pain and symptoms. Six, and I love this one, this is a personal favorite, recognizes and supports the needs of family caregivers. Seven, in the community, recognizes the increased risk and prevents needless decline. I guess that gets a little bit at the hospital and that you were saying that we want to reach people even earlier at the kitchen table, in their homes, where they are, and that good care really is beyond the hospital.
I think that that's really fundamental. It's really, how do we become proactive instead of reactive? Wait for everything to go wrong before the healthcare system is there for people.
Right. So I think that speaks to the fact that this project really counts on hospitals being connected to primary care centers and places where people get that care outside the hospital and coordinating well with them.
Yes.
And then you have eight in the hospital, restore health. Nine, in transitions, proactively arrange for necessary supports and services.
Leslie, can I go back to that restore health for a minute?
Oh, absolutely.
How many people listening to this podcast think that when you do go into the hospital that you are assured that your health is restored? It may sound like
think that until they've been hospitalized or had a loved one hospitalized. I think it's a rude awakening for a lot of people.
It is.
But the ones who have been around the block, yeah.
Yeah, so oftentimes, you know, and we want hospitals to be good places. We want them to provide the best possible care. But, you know, oftentimes it's you win the battle and lose the war. So they fixed something. But then the person is in such worse condition as a result of the hospitalization that their life isn't better. And they end up going into, you know, a nursing home afterwards because things happened along the way. It never should have happened for many people. And so how do we make sure that people aren't myopically just looking at the problem, the acute the acute care need, the surgery, the congestive heart failure, or the organ that wasn't working.
Right.
How do we get them to not just look at that, but to look at the person and what the overall care is doing to the overall needs of that person?
Mm-hmm.
So this one, it sounds like a minor thing, but I think it's really something kind of major.
Yeah, I mean, that's when people are the sickest and they're quite vulnerable. And yeah, I think ACE units have already shown how we can do better. But I love your idea of just bringing that, both making more ACE units available, but also bringing that outside the ACE unit so that everybody can get that kind of restorative help that often is lacking in the hospital. And then outcome number 10 would be seamlessly provide coordination between settings and providers. You know, just to come back to the hospital, I forget if it's one of the models listed, but, you know, there's the hospital at home kind of idea, or the idea of people sort of leaving that very controlled and often stressful hospital environment sooner. Is that part of, is that going to be a focus for age-friendly health systems or not particularly?
So that is very much a part of the notion of an age-friendly health system. And so I think the core principle that we're talking about is, how do we avoid the unnecessary hospitalization? And hospital at home is a model that when somebody has a chronic condition and it becomes an acute condition, something that needs a hospitalization, there are a set of these conditions like congestive heart failure, can be treated safely at home. They don't need to be in the hospital to get the care. So much of the concepts that are in the age-friendly health system are, what do we need to do in home care and in primary care to avoid that initial hospitalization? How do we do better at avoiding that? And are there other ways that we could be providing care that might be safer and better under a set of circumstances? So,
mm-hmm.
Yes, everything that we know is being poured into this age-friendly health system work. And Bruce Leff and Al Sue, who both have worked on this hospital at home, they are both advisors to this program. So they're deeply involved.
Well, it sounds like just a really wonderful project for the foundation to spearhead. I'm super excited to see it take off and look forward to seeing where it will go. Amy, thank you so very much for joining me today to tell us about it.
Thank you so much, Leslie. It's been a pleasure.
And with that, I'm going to wrap up this episode of Better Health While Aging. If you have any questions about something you heard in the episode, you can post it on the show notes page for this episode. I'll also be posting some of the links to some of the resources that we mentioned in the episode. To find the show notes, visit betterhealthwhileaging.net and click podcast in the main menu at the top. Last but not least, if you've been enjoying the podcast, don't forget to support us by subscribing on iTunes. And if you've already done that, please leave a rating and review. This makes it easier for others to discover our show in iTunes, and I would love for the many people who are interested in health or aging or family caregivers to be able to find it and give it a chance. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Dr. Leslie Kernison, and I'm looking forward to you joining us for future episodes.